Hey, everyone out there in podcast land. Just have to kind of apologize from that last podcast we put out. I was getting a little bit of flack for it, and I did know that the audio quality was definitely not up to spec. I probably should have gave you guys a warning on it and put a little intro and let you know what was going on, and I didn't. And again, I have to kind of apologize for that. But we did have a problem. GarageBand actually quit on us a couple times through the podcast, and we thought we had it going and everything was good. When we were done, somehow it lost it, and we couldn't get it back. So we thought we were done, and did a little digging and finally did recover it, but the audio levels were bad. It cut Wayne's mic out. We were having some issues, so we were going to scrap it, and we didn't think we were going to put a podcast out because we actually just recorded that a couple days before it was supposed to be released, and I couldn't get the guys back in to do another one. So I did spend a couple hours on Adobe trying to fix it. I was cutting out some parts, trying to adjust the levels for you, whether it be me down and Wayne up, or so that's about as best as I could really get it. And I was kind of on the fence about putting it out there, but overall I thought it was a pretty decent podcast, and I just wanted to get a little bit of content out there for you so at least you had something. But again, I do apologize. Next time, hopefully we won't have that problem again, but next time if we have any kind of issues, I will for sure, you know, let you know what's going on, give you a little heads up before you get into it. Also, in this podcast coming up, we did mention we might take a little break. I was talking with the guys. We probably will take a break for the holidays and be back after the first of the year because we got a lot of cool stuff and reviews and things that are going on. So other than that, I got a new one here for you, and this one should be quite a bit better as far as quality, and I think you'll enjoy it. So here we go. After hours here, back in the studio. With us tonight, we got Mike Coolins back here.
Hello.
And, of course, Wayne's back here.
Hey, guys.
So, we got a few things to talk about. We've been super busy and doing lots of stuff, and not as much flying as we like, no. For sure. I think we got some interesting topics, and, oh, man, we were just looking through the crash stories, too. We got some pretty good crash stories. In here.
I enjoy the hearing those.
But hey, before we get really rolling into it, Mike, you were just toying around with that little mini parrot drone.
Correct.
What do you think of that?
Obviously, the controls being on the iPhone and all, it was a little different. But I think I could have grasped it, and I wasn't going fast or not. I was
going
up, down, just learning the direction of it and how the rudder and stuff was. But I thought that was pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see the camera. I didn't realize there was a camera feature.
That'd there's a cool. little tiny camera on the bottom. Now, Wayne was over, and he was flying it last night, and I've flown it a few times. But I had to laugh because it's got, like, a sensor on the bottom where you can't get, you know, too close to it.
Sure.
It kind of moves out of the way. So I was flying it in the living room trying to get, you know, take a picture of myself. So every time I kept trying to stick my head up underneath,
and just take
fly off.
Yeah.
So I got a couple funny pictures. Maybe I should.
You're gonna have to post those.
Yeah.
Now, when it takes off, when it gets to an object, I didn't get to mess with it. If it's at a tilt or something, will it stay that way, getting away from the object, or will it level and then go up?
No, it'll actually. If you're like, say, you're flying at a wall
or going up to a tabletop or something,
yeah, it will actually fly into it. It seemed to be just that pressure or some kind of sensor on the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, like if it was coming over like a table and it was getting too low, it would just keep on going. But at first I really had a hard time with it. I just couldn't get used to the, you know, the phone. Well, then, you know, I went through the settings a little bit and kind of dumbed it down, you know, because you're so, like Wayne and I were talking,
touchy.
It was very touchy, and you're so used to using the sticks, you know. and or your mm-hmm. thumb would slip off the little button on the screen, and then it wasn't working right.
Yeah, the tilting was definitely the harder feature out of the things to learn on it from just that little bit I flew, was right. the tilting to go forward and tilt back to come yeah. back. That always messes with me a little bit.
Yeah.
Trying to grasp that.
Wayne picked it up quick. He was cranking around my living room. I thought he was doing way better than I was. He was, you know, figure eights, and he was doing really good. So we were trying to figure out, like, for us, you know, being in the hobby and flying with radios as long as we have, it was kind of tricky. But if somebody just went out and bought this, you know, off the shelf,
they'd probably grasp it pretty
yeah,
quick.
Yeah, I'm thinking like even like an older kid, you know, 14, 15-year-old kid who plays video games a lot. I what do you think, Wayne? I think they'd pick yeah. it up pretty quick. Huh?
The problem would be if you come from a radio side. That's the hard part.
Yes.
It's because it's the part that I didn't like is your left thumb, it slides the control, but on the right thumb, it's just holding a button, then you're tilting the phone, mm-hmm. which is counterintuitive because you're not sliding your left or your right thumb just like, but that's coming from the radio side.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if you've just picked this thing up and decide to fly, it could be a lot of fun and you probably wouldn't have as much trouble. But when you change over to the radio side, you can tilt that radio all you want.
I know.
It's not going to help.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed even in an earlier flight test episode, the larger parrot, I think one of the crew, if I remember correctly in the episode, he didn't fly with the radio a lot, and he was doing it really well with an iPad or something mm-hmm. that he was tilting it.
Uh-huh.
And they were shocked at how well he was doing, but he had no bad tendencies with the radio, obviously.
Yeah,
not that they're bad, but you're just accustomed to that,
right,
obviously.
That's what we were kind of thinking. Somebody who just, you know, thought it was cool.
That episode really showed that, I think, by that point.
I thought it's a little pricey. I think it's over $100 though for that. But, and you have to admit, Mike, it's very stable.
Yes.
You know, it's very, you take your hands off the phone or anything, it's right there, stops, doesn't move, really doesn't drift or anything. So, with not having any kind of trim tabs or anything like that, wouldn't you agree, Wayne? It was really stable.
Yeah, but you did say you dumbed it down quite a bit. So,
I did. Yeah. I did, but that was really for my own personal use because well, I kept flying into the walls.
I noticed when the battery died, it kind of went down fairly soft for me.
Yeah.
I was surprised with that because something wasn't right, but then it just went down, and then I saw that the battery was acting up.
And
so.
That is kind of a cool feature because, again, you can go into the parameters and set, like, your takeoff height. Like, if you want it to come 3 feet off the ground or 2 feet off the ground or 6 feet, you can dial all that in.
Is it Wi-Fi communication?
Yes, Wi-Fi. And also you can set the parameters to where it won't go. Like, say you don't want to go above 8 feet because you're, or 7 feet because your ceiling's 8.
Sure.
It won't go any higher than that. So it's kind of cool. You can adjust it around to
that
where,
is neat.
You know, you can set the limits, I think, on how far you can go and everything on it. So the only thing I think they could do, I, it has that little camera on there for this price range or maybe a little more. It would be really cool if they would just put a tiny little FPV camera in there. You know, right out the front, and you could just kind of cruise around FPV right off your phone or your iPad or whatever. That, to me, I think would be more fun.
Sure. So this camera is just, it wasn't an FP, it wasn't a live feed then. I misunderstood from the beginning.
No. That is just takes pictures.
Okay.
And the app and everything's pretty cool. It's got a gallery. It'll store your pictures for you. It'll send them out, whatever you want to do with
it. Because I was going to say $100, if it says FPV, that's extremely reasonable.
Yeah. That's why
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No,
go
no,
ahead
no.
with what you're
No, that's why I say, even if it was $40 more, I'd pay the $40 extra for the little FPV camera.
Sure.
And I don't think it would be that much more, you know, to be able to run it right off your phone. I mean, the original Parrot, you know, that's the way
it runs off the
Wi-Fi, so... But it's a neat little gadget.
I never saw, and you might want to mention these wheels before. Did you get to use them at all, or you didn't need it? Is it more of a training tool, possibly?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of...
You didn't try to walk up a wall with
it
or anything?
No, but I guess it kind of serves a couple purposes. One, you know, for somebody learning, you know, bumping into the walls and the ceiling and everything, it's a giant prop guard, because really what it is, it's kind of like has an axle that straps to it right in the center in the CG, and then on each outside it's got these giant, really thin, lightweight wheels.
Looks like a TIE fighter wings almost.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. Yeah, that's exactly kind of what it looks like. So, and the other thing, looking at the videos, you know, you can run it up the walls, across the floor, and chase the dogs with it, you know, or something like that. So it is kind of neat.
I did notice both of your dogs decided to get out of the way whenever you brought it out. Well, no, they sat there at first, but once the props flew, fired up.
Yeah.
They left the room.
My little ankle biters know right away. They've been around long enough when they see the little nano quadcopters come out that
Well, they probably saw your large scale version. If they were in the room then, everyone was hitting the deck.
Yeah. No, they weren't around then. But yeah, they don't like the Nano QX. As soon as that thing fires up, they're under the couch or somewhere. They're not digging that thing at all. So, but it's neat. I kind of like that little thing. So, I'll tell you what. Let's get into some of these crash stories. Some of them are kind of long. I'll try to kind of brief through them a little bit, but that isn't what I want. Let's go with the first one, Wayne. I know we were talking about this the other day. This is from BZ Bat, BATTE. Is that how you say that? Bat.
Yeah, I like this story. This is pretty cool.
This is good. My friend and I were out flying the other day. He was flying the Storch and I was flying the F-22, and I heard him say, "Oh no." I look
that
up.
That's not what you want to hear in the field.
Exactly. I look up to see that the plane, and it looked to be flying okay. I asked him if he had control while still trying to focus on my own plane, which I've done that a million times. Somebody's got a problem. You're still trying to see what's going on and fly your plane, and I've crashed doing
that. The chameleon eye effect there going.
Exactly. He said he didn't, so I looked back to see his plane doing a slow loop and roll about 100 feet, and then he said, "I think something fell off." I looked back at his plane and see it gliding down with a slight purpose in a bank. I tried to get my plane on the ground as quickly as possible and tried to get some video of the uncontrolled good friend. I just want to get some video of this. I wanted to get some video of the uncontrolled descent, but was unable. As the plane settled to the ground, we were laughing like crazy and rejoiced as we saw it make a perfect landing. There was a strong wind, and the plane was carried about 400 feet downwind from where he lost control. By this time, we both knew that the battery had fallen out. We got to the plane, finding it completely unharmed. After pacing across the field, we also found the battery. And the cool thing was, Mike, here, look, there's the plane. He sent a picture of the plane. It doesn't
pristine,
even have a scratch
pristine,
on it.
Yes.
But I've seen that. I can tell you how many times I've seen batteries, especially here at flight test, and them guys in Bixler flying, batteries falling out of planes.
And it managed to glide down nice and pristine.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good
That's a good crash story there, I'll tell you.
Yeah, that one was good.
Wish they all ended like that.
Mm-hmm. Pat just had one. I wish he was here. It wasn't too long ago. I think he was talking about he's flying the T-28. Yeah, flipped it over. I can't remember if he was doing rolls or he went inverted and the hatch fell off and the battery came out. And this was just recently. All right, this other one's
if other people are like me when I was new to it, especially, but the battery fell out. I'm still eagerly trying to control it, not connecting the two things. I don't know why when I was first learning, what's going on? Why is it, the battery's on, but it's just that quick,
Right,
you're like,
right.
It happens so quick that it takes you a little while to process, I have no power.
Exactly.
This isn't going to do anything.
Instead of trying to realize the situation, you're going, it's not working, what's going on? The stick should, why is it,
At least I did it for probably longer than most. I must process things a little slower than some people, but I couldn't put it together for a little while, and it was quite embarrassing.
Funny. I wanted to tease you, too, when you're flying a little quad in here. I was like, don't worry, Mike. You're not going to lose this one.
I had the guys listen to the fly away one at work.
Did he?
Oh, my gosh. That was too funny.
Oh, that's funny. All right. What do we have? Okay, this one's from Hunter Benbow. He says, "Hey, Chris, this is one of my mini crash stories just a couple weeks ago. I had bought a Axon floater from Hobby King at a swap meet at the very end of September. Great flyer, guessing much like the Bixler in characteristics. I flew it for hours, had a great time. At thermal's nice, really just cruising around. I loved it. Ordered the Fat Shark Teleporter V3 Ready to Fly goggles from Ready Made RC. Arrived in a couple weeks from Ohio to New Zealand. Oh man, this guy's from New Zealand. Got it mounted, camera, transmitter within a half hour, and coming home from school, I was all ready to maiden. So one Wednesday morning before school, I charged up the batteries, went out, flew FPV for the first time and loved it. Got some good shots of the sunrise as well as having a close call with two paradise ducks and a hawk, picture attached. All right, that night after dinner, I dragged my dad out into the paddock and threw the goggles on him. Excuse me. He liked it. Besides the continual complaints of keep it smooth, ooh, right there, keep flying that way, it was pretty fun. We had a good time. So after I put the goggles on and flew around a bit, it was about 500 meters north and about 300 to 400 feet up. Then the control link dropped. So when the control link dropped, then as I sat there with crystal clear video link, it started to dive. So with some colorful language exiting my mouth as I stood there watching this plane dive straight, then the link went static and we heard a deafening crunch of that EPO. How many I have that embedded in my brain of EPO crunching, and it is surprisingly loud when a foam plane goes into the ground. Yeah. It really is. So I ran over to it. He had to run through a field, cross three fences. I arrived at the scene slightly happy that the battery didn't explode and also devastated at the sight of my plane. The Pilot HD camera was okay, thanks to its metal case, but the small chunk was taken out of the micro SD card, making the card unreadable.
No.
The plane was a write-off. Luckily, I only paid $70 for it. Later on, I stripped all electronics from the smashed airframe, gave a small tug on the R615 Orange RX from Hobby King to find that the aerial snapped off and the wire strands had somehow become brittle and snapped, meaning that when the last strand snapped, it would not even pick up half of the 2.4 gigahertz signal. Some research led me to extending the aerial wires on each wire to make it a total of two full wave aerials. I then stripped the outer 31 mil. Okay, so he's talking about, yeah, fixed his receiver. Hope that wasn't too boring. Sorry it's a bit long, but this story's for you. Looking forward to hearing the next upcoming podcast. That was a cool story, Hunter. I like that. And again, we hear so many stories of the antennas either breaking or coming loose on receivers, and that's 9 times out of 10.
I've had that happen with the Orange myself.
Yeah, me too. So that seems to be a common problem. So I guess that's one thing you really got to check out every night. But sometimes they're hard to see. Like,
yeah.
If it's in the plane
and
it's breaking loose or, you know, coming loose, you can't always see them in there. Let's see. I got another one here from Joel. All right, Joel. Joel Bursch. Hi, After Hours Gang. My name is Joel, and I'm a community college student in Salem, Oregon. I actually have two crash stories for you. Here it goes. First one was my second scratch build. I built FT Spitfire and loved it. It lasted 9 months with a few minor crashes. Then one day I decided to go fly at my local park about the size of two youth soccer fields. I take it out of my truck, realize the elevator is a bit loose and floppy. Ah, first mistake. But I didn't want to go home and fix it, so I threw it up in the air. I'm doing some minor aerobatics like loops and rolls when I decide to do a high speed low pass. I go into a dive, but then it starts to pick up more speed when I wanted more speed than I wanted it to. So I try to pull up, but it actually starts to nosedive, then more tight right into the puddle in the middle of the field. After looking at it, I realized what happened to the elevator. It folded, and when it hit the ground, it broke the main wing spar, ripped the whole front end in front of the wing right off and bounced about 5 feet in the air. Now I'm going to have to salvage the electronics and build an FT storage.
Ouch.
Joel. Now it's funny because I've seen that happen in person too. Again, another Pat Humbert story. It was another T-28 and we were out flying and I noticed his elevator was fluttering a little bit. I said, Pat, man, I think your elevator, it'll be okay. I'm just going to make a couple more circuits. Guess what? We've seen it just slowly fade away in the distance with no elevator.
No.
And that's when it crashed inside the fence there at the school.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
We had to send Xander under the, yeah.
Oh, that's that one.
Yeah.
I wrecked a Spitfire at the Flight Fest, but I was doing inverted. It wasn't an elevator issue. It was a little different, but man, and well, I remember Eric Monroe's like, yeah, I saw that hit out there. It was in the morning, I think. It might have been Sunday morning. I had a pretty decent paint scheme. Anyways, I was doing inverted, and I came real low, and there was just no way I could roll out. I was way too low, and I landed upside down and wrecked it pretty bad. So I got another kit I'm going to be building eventually. I just haven't got to it yet. But I loved that Spitfire. It flew so well, the FTE
Pilot
Spitfire.
Air?
Huh?
Pilot Air?
Pilot Air.
Was it Pilot Air that it crashed?
Oh, I would say yes. Oh, okay. It wasn't a failure, like the story here, but it's always disappointing watching them wreck.
Yeah, that's sometimes it just stinks. Sometimes you don't know what.
That was a really good flying plane, too. Yeah. I really did like that. And it looks so nice in the sky.
There are definitely times where you don't know if you want to laugh or cry, you know. I got another one here from Tom McGarry. Now, this one's a little long, so just bear with me, but it's pretty funny. And it's kind of a little lesson learned, too, because this has happened to me. Hi, Chris. I'm a longtime flight test and after-hours listener. I'm an intermediate pilot flying 3D fixed wing and multi-rotor mostly. I recently bought a Hobby King 48-inch Edge 540 and flew it for about 6 months with no problems. My friends really wanted me to try it, but there was no way I would let a beginner fly my nice big plane all by himself. So we decided to do a buddy box. Oh, even a buddy box on a 3D airplane. Oof. The night before, in the small apartment building, I tried to set it up on my Turnigy 9X with a spare radio. I've never used or set up a buddy box system before, and let me just say, if you're doing any type of setup on your plane, please take the propeller off. I don't think I need to tell you what I didn't take off. The 13-inch APC off my full-powered plane when I did this, and when I clicked the throttle in the buddy box settings, my plane went full throttle and shot across the room, taking out a stack of DVDs and lodged itself into my entertainment stand. My girlfriend screamed so loud, and so did I. I think I've since then bought a DX9 and use a wireless buddy box without issue. What really scared me the most was that the whole time I was working on the plane and the radio, it was sitting on the floor facing me. I then turned around the plane to face away from me, and not even 2 minutes later when it went full throttle.
Oh, boy.
I am so thankful that I turned the plane around when I did, or that could have been bad. It was a rookie mistake for sure, and I'm fairly certain that I won't ever do that again. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Tom. Have you ever had that happen, Mike? Any time plane went full? Oh, really?
That's what that scar there is.
Oh, that's a big scar.
That was from F-22, and obviously not a 13-inch prop, but
wow.
And it was bleeding all over it, man. It took two lashes. You wouldn't think a plastic propeller, but those speeds, yeah. It cut right into my hand, like,
so,
you wouldn't believe.
So what happened?
I bled all over the place.
Well, yeah.
It's like slicing your wrist almost.
Whoa.
I couldn't get to quit bleeding. And my dad, I had it all over his concrete outside, all the way into the house, but... I just can't believe those props. I mean, I should know. I mean, they're at such fast RPM, but man, it was that quick.
What caused it? Or
I'm trying to remember. I just know it throttled up when I had it in my hand, and that propeller on that plane's right in middle.
In the center, yeah.
So I mean, and it just grazed up. I'm trying to think of what scenario I was actually in. I just know it ramped up on me when I had it in my hand, and man, it was that quick. Put the gashes out of my hand.
And it does. It happens.
I forget what scenario, because it was kind of, I don't remember now, unfortunately. It's been probably 3-4 years ago. But
and then usually after you do it, you think, you idiot. You know exactly. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had anything?
No.
You're a smart man, Mr. Wayne. I've had it happen to me a few times, but I'm trying to think. The one that sticks in my head the most, luckily nothing got, I didn't get hurt or anything, but I had a plane on my workbench. And it was, I can't even remember what plane it was, but it was one where if, I can't remember what I did, whether, you know, back, way back when, you know, you turn your airplane on first, and then mm-hmm. before your radio, the thing would just take off. And I had a new Radian when they first come out, was sitting there all together, minus the wings. And when I flicked that airplane on or turned it on, I can't remember what I did, plugged the battery in, that plane took off. Right there on the workbench, went right across the table and cut my Radian in half.
Oh.
So if you notice, Wayne, I think you know, on my original Radian, in the center, there's a mm-hmm. big giant piece of tape.
Yeah.
Because it cut it right in half. It was, well, I'm going to knock his coffee over yet. I better knock that off. So, yeah, I know Chad almost cut his finger off, too.
Well, that was an X-Acto, I thought, wasn't it? Was
no,
that
I think that was a prop. I'm pretty sure.
Because he had a pretty bad gash, yeah. I remember, where he had it taped up for a while.
Yeah.
I thought I think he had an X-Acto issue as well. It might be a different issue.
That could be. So
there's dangers involved with those,
you know,
props,
you,
man.
Yeah, you got to think. You really do. It's like you said, Mike, the little plastic.
I think I might have just had it, the lanyard, and it caught the throttle, if I remember correctly. Because I've seen a lot of people that use rubber bands to go around the backside to keep it drawn down. A mere throttle, so it doesn't kick up on you. I should consider those schemes. 'Cause it's,
Hey, real quick before we move on, I don't know if I mentioned this last podcast, Wayne, but I'm just going to throw it out real quick. Henry Patterson, he likes to listen to the podcast, and he made a little poster for us. It says, keep calm and crank around.
Yeah.
So I thought that I'd just give him a little shout out. So thanks, Henry, for listening. That was pretty cool. Hey, we got, well, I'll tell you what, let's start with this. Can I throw myself under the bus here a little bit?
I
already was telling Wayne about this, but you know, a little bit, and you've been on some of the shoots and stuff, helping out, Rotor DR1. They needed an extra, pilot, last Sunday. So they asked me, I had stuff going on, and they were like, we really, you know, need some help, blah, blah. I said, okay. I finally gave in. I said, all right, I'll come down and help you, not knowing, you know, really what I was going to do. So I thought I'd just be flying, you know, one of the little Omnibus drones or doing something like that. So when I get there, I find out that I actually had to fly Rotor DR1.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
So at that point, I started getting pretty nervous. You know,
well, they have backups, I saw.
And this is the part that makes me very happy, because I've been on the receiving end of being very nervous, and this is finally the time that Mr. Chris gets to be nervous.
So, you know, I think I've really only flown your tricopter once or twice, mm-hmm. and I think I've flown one of David's once or twice. Mostly it's quadcopters. And I've never flown rotor, obviously. And so Tom Nicholson, the producer, is like, you've flown it before. I'm like, Tom, no, I have what? You know, no.
There's only a couple of these in existence.
So he's like, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. We're not going to do a whole lot. And Chad will be here. Run some batteries through it. Get used to it. And I'm like, all right. But I was still nervous. So naturally, Chad was running late. He was actually working on rotor. I found out later. So we get there, the film crew is ready to go. I mean, they were set up, you know, everything. We were waiting on rotor, basically. So we finally get there. We get all ready to go. I go to run a battery through it, just get ready to go, and the tail servo goes, which already, you know, that just added, compiled onto everything else.
Lord.
So we tore it apart, checked it all out, got that situated, got it back together. And Chad says, all right, just get it up and cruise around a little bit, and then we'll go. All right, so I got it up. It was a little touchy for me because Eric's real good at, you know, flying mm-hmm. them and what he does, and everything's very precise. Me, with my dumb thumbs, I had to dial in some expo, but I felt good with it. I was doing some circuits, figure eights, nose it, no problem. So I'm like, all right, let's go. So I was good until they said action, and yeah. I don't know. I mean, I was literally shaking. My hands were shaking. My legs were trembling. Mm-hmm. It was tough. And I haven't felt that, I think, since back beginning, you know, trying to learn inverted. I remember I used to, mm-hmm. you know, it was horrible. And I actually thought as the day went on, I would calm down a little bit. But then the wind was picking up a little bit more. And not that it's a big deal, but the auto level on the board doesn't work. So everything is solely manual on that thing, no matter, you know. And but I made it through the day, but I just figured I'd throw myself under the bus to let you know.
That's pretty intense.
It was, for me, very intense, very nerve-wracking.
Where was the scene at, if you don't mind me asking? Was you in a building outside?
No, we were outside, luckily.
I don't want to give too much away. No, I just was wondering, you know, what environment you were in.
You know, with me and Wayne and probably like you too, I'm fine. Like, I could go out and probably fly that thing no mm-hmm. problem, all around, do whatever I want with it.
But the pressure of the film fact, production and all the people relying on
that,
it too.
I think. You're trying to do what they want you to, and it was flying around people. Yeah. You know, I was right by the actors, right by the camera people, mm-hmm. but everybody. So you're right there, and
that's very scary.
When I got home, I was so mentally drained. I felt like I was back in, getting my instrument rating back in the airplane where you go out and fly 2 hours and go home and sleep for eight because you're so mental. I couldn't believe it. I was really shocked. So I just figured I'd throw that out there and throw myself under the bus.
Wow.
I think by the end of the day, I got rid of the shakes. But, man, that first scene, it was terrible. I'm like, Chris, you gotta calm down. Just calm down. Deep breath. Yeah.
You can't.
It's
do
no.
That, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's like no big deal. It's no. And then Chad, you know, he probably seen I was a little shaking. He's like, Kevin, are you all right? You all right? And which that didn't help any. You know?
Yeah.
I'm fine, Chad. Everything's good. You know. So it was fun. It was an experience, and I might do it one more time. But I hope next time I'm a little calmer. Maybe I won't drink no coffee. I don't know. But so anyway, that was my little experience.
That's last a huge, Sunday. Huge weekend then.
Yeah, it was. I've said it before. I give Eric a lot of credit. He's good at what he does.
Oh, he's phenomenal. Yeah, even with the drone races, which have already been out there. That's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, watching him fly that thing around. Yeah, inside like that.
Smooth as could be.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, hey, we're gonna move on here. Let's talk a little bit about now. Of course, everybody listening, where it's probably above 40 degrees down south or Australia or New. We're going to talk a little winter setups because we got a lot of people that fly in the cold, fly in the snow. We got a lot of Canucks up there that listen to the podcast. So,
hi, Andre.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought we would talk a little bit about winter setups, gear, what you do, planes to fly, stuff like that. So
this does not apply to Flying Monkey.
Yes. So Fred, if you're listening, you can turn it off, come back in 10 or 15 minutes or you know, maybe Fred, we'll call you and we'll get your beach settings, you know, when you're flying when it's 80 degrees off the beach, you know, we can see how you do that because we're unfamiliar with that.
Yeah.
So I'd say the first thing we've learned through the years too, Mike, and you're probably the same way, is we try to have something with gear on that we can put skis on, you know, whether it be like a T28 mm-hmm. or the Beaver or, you know, even though you're flying a tail dragger, I've never put a ski on the tail wheel, but, you know, even with the Beavers and stuff, I haven't really seen where it really hindered it.
No.
You know, the wheel's small enough that it doesn't really affect it. Even on the big, the Carbon Cub, I've had zero issues with flying that, you know, in the snow. One thing you do kind of want to stay with, and we've done it anyway, is flying like a belly lander. We were flying our P-51s mm-hmm. that one day, and it was pretty light and fluffy snow. And when we landed, the planes would just bury themselves right in the snow, and he ended up picking it. I mean, that snow packs.
Oh, it'll pack in that engine. Oh, boy.
And then around the motor, and then the motor's warm, so then it freezes.
Oh, man.
It is a pain.
Never thought about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a good idea.
Yeah, it's not real good. So the first thing, you know, I think you want to do is find something with gear, something, you know, you can put some skis on. Or, you know, unless you have like a plowed parking lot or something, you could still use your gear. You know, something like
and
that.
And the floats, like with the floats on the Beaver, that worked real well.
Yes.
I mean,
that
except
worked.
For the one day when it was just about to warm up enough where the snow was sticking to the floats.
Right. Yeah, we did have that problem.
Oh, that
I
was
forgot
crazy.
About that.
Oh, yeah.
We had a hard time getting them off the ground. We had a hard time landing. It was right at that 32-degree mark, you know, Mike, when it was
soft,
wet.
And
yeah, and the planes literally would just stick right in the snow. And I was flying the big Carbon Cub that day on skis, and the thing literally would just it'd power up, pull the tail off the ground, and I'd just firewall it, and it would just from dead stop just up in the air, just straight up. There was no takeoff. I mean, nothing. It was just tail up, off the ground.
Now, the landing was it the same way where you stick it like two darts into the ground?
Yeah. You actually had to come in and stall that thing as slow as you can go.
Yeah, I bet.
Because I think you had a couple times where you came in, it stuck, and just flipped right over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you fly in the winter, Mike?
Absolutely nothing.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't ever remember seeing him out there in the wintertime.
No, I
you
never
don't go out in the winter at all?
No, not I have not done
except
that.
Except when he's hunting.
And I'll tell you, which you shouldn't use the Dollar Tree foam in that environment.
No,
but if you're even considering it, make sure that thing is min-waxed to the no end if you're going to even attempt it.
Yeah.
That's which I min-wax everything now, but
right.
I don't know in snow environments. That would be pretty harsh as well, I think, on it.
I don't know.
I never tested it because I don't fly in the winter. But
We flew the vegan in the winter quite a bit, you know, when David was here.
That's a belly lander.
Of course. You know, either had sticker kit or, like you said, it was painted and min-waxed. So we never really had any problems. But, yeah, again, if you don't, by the time you get in the house, things going to be falling apart.
I believe it.
So, skis.
That sounds
floats.
Like the way to go with the skis, though.
Yeah, I know Dubro makes a really good set of skis. And I know you told me to write this down.
You
and
didn't
I didn't.
Do it, did you?
if you have some bigger planes, there's a company. Maybe I'll try to put those in the show notes. They make aluminum skis that are really, really nice, very reasonable. I think they're around $40. It's something Maiden.
That's right.
USA.
I'll find it because you posted it on Instagram.
Oh, that's right.
I'll find it.
While he's looking that up, I'm trying to think. Batteries, you know, try to keep charge your batteries.
They said keep them warm, I think, is what Dave said when I watched different things.
Yep, yep. Try to keep them warm or in your pocket.
Until you're ready to fly.
Yeah, until you're ready to go. The biggest thing with us, too, that we finally broke down and purchased, I have the fingerless gloves, but then we also purchased the transmitter mitts.
The box things? Oh, the mitts.
Yeah,
okay.
Off of Hobby King. They're cheap, Wayne. What are they, 10, 12
bucks?
They
do just flip out so you can use them.
No, it's actually like a bag, Mike. It's a mitt bag that your whole radio goes in. You close it all in. It's got like a little, you know, plastic clear piece on the top, mm-hmm. and then you actually slide your hands right in.
I see.
And if you got some light mittens plus those, I'll tell you what, we've been out in below zero before flying, and they do a pretty good job. So that's a big thing, trying to stay warm.
Sure.
Yes. Made in USA. MMP.com?
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, the guys, go check that out because they make some awesome aluminum skis for bigger airplanes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're perfect. Good quality, you know, fit good, went right on. You're not going to beat those up. So what else, Wayne? What else do we usually do in the winter? You know, it's crazy, too. I don't know what it is about winter. We usually wait till we get a big snowfall or it's windy or nasty, and then we usually like to go out and fly. But I don't know why. Because in the summer we don't do that.
I'd be willing to do that next time it happens. If you guys,
you want to come?
I wouldn't mind trying.
Oh, it's so much fun.
I wouldn't mind trying.
So much fun.
I like cold weather. I'd much rather do that than have a 100-degree day. In my book, I can't dress for that.
You know, that reminds me, and I should have asked Dave about it when we shot that vegan video. Last winter, that was, I think, on record there for that day.
Oh, that
was
the extreme.
Coldest day.
Yes, it
there?
Was. No, but I think I watched it, and I remember that.
I think when we got up that morning, it was minus 15, and I texted David. I said, are we really still going to do this today? He's like, yep, we are going out there, and we are shooting the video. And I really felt bad for Dave, and I think Brian was, oh, my gosh. I mean, it literally after
wind chills and stuff,
10 minutes. I couldn't talk. My face was completely numb. I couldn't talk. And we're out there trying to talk and fly. And it was unbelievable. And then another.
Was that the one where you wrecked into PJ's house?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Of course you'd remember that.
Yeah,
but it definitely showed the replacement nose feature. Really
nice.
Yeah.
I did that on purpose to show the breakaway nose feature.
Yes.
I'll tell you the other funny story is when I was, you know, way in the beginning stages of my flying career, you know, wintertime around here just stinks, I think anyway. And, you know, desperately you want to go out and fly, and it's always usually windy and nasty or whatever. And one time, you know, it was way before trainer, you know, the weather mitts and everything. My hands got cold naturally, and I'm like, you know what, I still want to fly. I'm having too much fun. So I sat in my car.
Yeah. Oh man, I never heard of this.
Oh yeah, sat in my car, fired it up, turned the heat on, set my plane outside, and I flew from my car. And let me tell you, that's not easy.
No, because you've got constraints there. Your roof, the sides of the. Man,
flew from my car.
That sounds crazy.
Yeah, so. It was interesting.
What was you flying? Do you remember?
I was trying to. I think it was the old Hobby Zone Super Cub, but at that time it was converted over. I was flying off the DX6i, and I had a brushless motor and ailerons and everything. But it was that plane on skis in the wintertime.
They need. I'm not thinking like you need a turret, you know, where it's just a globe over you, so you can turn and look.
Oh my gosh. What else? Wintertime. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Keep your batteries warm. Get some good trainer mitt.
Yes, definitely keep the batteries
some
warm.
Skis.
Do you have to keep the batteries warm in the transmitter as well, or is that not as critical? Probably.
When we started wearing the gloves for the
actual,
the mitts,
I see
that for the
radio
helps.
That helped.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I think if I remember correctly, I'd have to look, but I think Hobby King's got some kind of heater too that you can. Put in them and it just plugs into a battery. I think it's meant for something else, but people have used them for the heaters for their mitts to keep them warmer. But man, them things work great, you know, on a windy day or whatever.
Because really that's the only thing really, it's exposed, obviously.
Yeah.
And trying to control it.
And I even posted that one little video there of us last year.
And it literally, I'll tell you, that was a blast.
It's got to look even more crazy. The guys out flying in the winter, like if you were to go to Jackson or something, oh, people see you out
there. That's where we are.
Oh, yeah.
The people driving by got to be like, what are those guys?
And the funny part is the camera.
I mean, I think it's funny on nice days.
The camera doesn't pick up as much snow as it really was.
Yes.
It still does. It's like rain at times. It just doesn't show as much as
snow that last.
I mean, people look at us odd in the decent weather. Well, it's not doing this. It's just a whole nother level.
Here was the funny thing is we happened to get like 2 feet of snow that day. So the snowplow guys were out snow plowing the and here's us on our beavers, you know, on final going over the parking lot. And they just kept looking at us. They're like, what are they doing? We're laughing the planes. We had 30 mile an hour gusts that day.
Oh, yeah.
It was like 12 gusting
what
to 30.
You guys are better pilots than I thought.
We were just getting tired of being cooped up.
Yeah, we were cooped up, and we thought, okay, we got 2 feet of snow. How bad's it really, you know? And at one point, it was snowing so hard when luckily the beavers got lights all the way around. Rotating beacon, landing light, nav lights, strobes, everything. That thing would get 20 feet away from me. The only thing you would see was
the
beacon. The beacon. Look.
It's called a desperation flight.
Oh,
you just have
Lord.
To get out of the house.
Oh,
you picked a doozy of a day for that.
But you know
like.
What? That was probably one of the
most
best
memorable.
Winter flights we've ever had.
Yeah,
probably the most memorable of that too.
We had so much fun that day.
Now, see, I'm the exact opposite. I hate winter. I would rather fly in the summertime.
Oh, absolutely.
But
what are you
we
do?
Had a blast. Yeah. Oh man. Oh yeah. We live in Ohio. So.
Right.
Most people are like you, Wayne. I'm the oddball when it comes to cold weather. I got the thermocells for my heated insoles now, and those work great when I'm up my tree.
Yeah, so we got to drag you out there, Mike. I think you would have a good time out there.
And I'm the only guy that likes ice fishing. I can't get anyone to go ice fishing with me.
Oh, forget it.
All you do is drill a couple holes to warm up. Good to go.
Yeah, it seemed like everybody I knew went ice fishing. They went out there in their little hut, drilled the holes, and sat out there and ate and drank beer.
Well, see, and you know what? I don't even drink when I go. They're like, you really have issues if you're sitting there watching a cork and you're not drinking. I said, I'll tell. I never, growing up and stuff, I never mixed drinking with fishing or hunting. I take it way too serious. They're like, really? You're looking at a cork for like 12 hours in an ice hole.
I couldn't do it. There's no way. Speaking of winter flying, I was talking to Andre the other day, and he said his buddies, and he didn't catch it till he said he got there kind of after it happened, but he said his buddies were out flying the other day, and it was just that perfect condition. And they actually landed, and they had ice on their wings and ice on their props.
Really?
I remember that,
I said, I want pictures.
That's right,
I
remember that.
I've been trying to duplicate that for the last 3 years, and I haven't been able to do that yet.
Not yet.
Not one time. And, I mean, we have been out in some serious snowstorms. So, hey, that's the thing. If anybody out there, if they've had that and has any pictures of that on their
cool.
RC plane of iced up.
Iced wings.
Yeah, I'd love to hear the story, see if it broke down the flying characteristics like it does on a normal airplane. And I have seen some pictures on quadcopters with ice on their on their props. But I've never really seen anything on the RC planes, but I'd love to see it. I want to do that so bad. I just want to ice one up and have it go into the ground just to see if it, I know that's probably bad to say, but, and then if that happens, then maybe I'll make some kind of rubber de-icing boots or I don't know. I mean, you probably do that on a ducted fan jet or something. So, all right. Anything else on winter setups?
You'll be coating the wing with brine.
Yeah. Got little alcohol injectors on it, That would be funny. Pat would be a good one. Him being in the aviation industry to talk about, we could hook something up, some kind of de-icing equipment on an airplane. So, that'd be interesting. Even if you do a little FPV, have a camera on there facing the wing, so you actually watch it. See what kind of ice.
Yeah, deform and develop.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an idiot. All right. Hey, the next subject we wanted to touch on a little bit, and I was talking with Eric Monroe, and this whole FAA thing with the they call them drones and everything that's going on. And I know Wayne and I talked a little bit about last night, but we just wanted to touch a little bit, you know, with this technology they got coming out, Mike, and you know, where you have GPS and you can set up waypoints and they got return to home and everything. Right. And, you know, your average person with a wad of cash in their pocket can go out and buy a DJI Phantom 2 and literally just go out and fly it.
Right.
So, you know, I thought about it a little bit too when I was down there flying DR1, you know, when everything was full manual and everything, that I don't know how to or what they could do, but, you know, Eric brings up a great point where probably 80% of them people that go out and buy them, if something happens or you lose GPS, which is very easy to do and a good possibility, you lose some satellites and, you know, your return to home is not set everywhere, they cannot fly it manually.
Right.
You know, if it, maybe in a straight line, if it was going away from them, possibly. Mm-hmm. But would they be able to turn around and fly it back home? It's no.
And these guys are strictly flying FPV, which is first person view.
Right.
And if the video goes down and now you have to fly it line of sight, can you do a nose in?
Exactly.
I mean, that's where the rubber hits the road.
Right.
You know, do you still have the skills to land that thing safely and get it back?
Right.
And that's the part that I see with the problem with this is people are grabbing it and just leaning everything into the technology. The technology is awesome. I love it. But
yes,
you got to have some skills to go with it.
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, if anybody's listening, maybe they're thinking about getting into it or they want to, you know, got some money and they just want to hop right into the FPV stuff. And anybody here will tell you, anybody at Flight Test will tell you, that stuff's great to play with, and it is awesome.
Oh, it is.
But, man, take that thing out, put it in manual, and just fly it around a little bit. You know, get the hang of it. Get the nose in and the side and left and right. You know, just flying it manually the way, you know, originally. And, you know, get some experience under your belt. And then the other thing, too, you know, even if you are, you know, we've talked about it before, you know, especially with FPV, and it's just, you know, it brings me back to the actual learning how to fly. You know, when you're up there, you got to know your surroundings and know where you're going. Oh, you know, yeah. And if you're out flying FPV and you're, you know, relying on the return to home or whatever, if you got a problem, you've got to know where you're at. And it's very, very easy to get disoriented. And Chad can tell you firsthand, you know, he's been up there FPV and thought he was where he was, and it turned out he wasn't. And when he when he realized it was too late.
There's a lot of drifting up there that you don't realize.
Exactly.
I mean, you lose bearings even out on a boat when we were on Lake Erie. We were drifting for hours,
yeah,
and then we come back to shore. It's like, oh, do we go left, right? We had compass, but it's like, man, you can get disoriented in drifts like you wouldn't believe.
Exactly.
Same in the air, I would say.
Yeah, and even, you know, on the lake, if you head out one direction and you're heading north and you're drifting, you're like, okay, all we got to do is head south, but it might be 3 miles down from where you
put
luck.
In. Yeah, I mean, exactly. There's some variables there. You really got to know.
Yeah, so you really got to know.
And
your
air movement's just the same as the water, for sure.
Exactly.
I mean, it has those variables that you got to tend to.
Right. So you got to get out there and you know, learn to fly these things a little bit, and you know. So do you really have any idea or anything, Mike? What happened with yours or anything? Now,
low battery, I believe, was the main thing. I honestly do, because I way overflew the time that I should have. I don't even know if I had a timer set, but I did. I know that I'm pretty sure that's what happened to me. I had low battery, and then it wasn't responding to the controls, and I know it was getting low on battery.
Right.
I don't know if that's the only reason, but that's my hunch on the matter.
Yeah.
I just know I was jamming the sticks, and there was nothing before I lost sight of it. And I know it was getting low battery because I think I came down. I forget. Something told me that there was a low battery and I still pushed it. And I'm like, I forget what it was that kind of I've had that feeling with low battery before. I can't remember the symptom right now, but I'm pretty sure that's what went on.
Wasn't any kind of range issue or anything?
No, I was fairly close. I mean, I was just over the trees. I mean, I wasn't that ridiculous. I brought it down, but then it just went straight away. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it could have been pilot error, but I just know when I jammed the sticks, you would expect something to occur, and there was nothing.
Yeah.
When I was doing extremes.
So what do you guys think? I know they've talked about and even proposed a few things of you know, if you want to go out and fly these quadcopters with, you know, all the GPS and the waypoints and everything, about going through some kind of, don't know, I guess it'd be like a flight school and even maybe get some kind of a little license or something like that. You think that's even feasible?
Nah, I don't know. The problem is the guys that are going to break the law are going to break the law no matter what. You're just going to put a burden on the normal everyday flyers. And that's unfortunate because it's just like anything else. You know, you have people that abuse it, people who don't put boundaries, don't respect other people's privacy. They don't.
Yeah.
And they always got to get the last laugh or whatever.
Right. And, you know, like we've talked, if you just use common sense and use your head, man. You know, it's not like, do you just go streaking through your neighbor's yard? Yeah. No. So same thing with, you know, your copter, even I guess your plane or something. You're not going to just, you know, especially like an FPV copter, you're not just going to go, you know, trouncing through your neighbor, unless you know them real well or something. Maybe they don't care if you're streaking through their backyard.
That's not something I plan on doing anytime.
Or flying over their heads, you know. And there's just a lot of things people just need to pay attention to. But
luckily, I had a lot of, even though I had a lot of woods around. I mean, I wasn't real crazy like some things you see on YouTube. But I'll tell you, I was still a beginner, though, and I'm sure I did maybe not everything possibly safe. But
yeah.
I did as safe as I could for what I was trying to demo to people.
Right.
And I didn't think no one was going to get harmed. If at worst, I might like hit one of the parked cars or something because I did fly out of the lot there, but I tried staying to the back.
Yeah.
And I would have had to deal with those consequences.
Yeah,
I did try to use some, I mean, like you say, use common sense mostly. Yeah, I mean,
right. My thing is too, for me, it seems like if something can go wrong for me, it will.
Yeah, you better plan for it.
Yeah, I've learned over the years that you got to look at the worst possible scenarios, you know.
Well, but you know what, though? And think about it. But you're coming at it from the aspect of flying. You got experience. So you know things can go wrong.
Yeah.
What were we just talking about? People who don't fly, who will go out and buy it right off the shelf, charge the batteries, and go.
Right.
They don't know that, hey, this stuff can fail.
Yes.
You know, they don't care. They just want to do the thing.
It can
do
damage.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, they just think, oh, it's, you know, nothing can fail. You know.
Those are people who have been flying, and most of the people that listen to this podcast know, oh, no, we've anchored a few into the ground, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it.
I think I read or heard somewhere there's a lot more close calls in the airways now. Is that true? I don't know if that was media hype or what.
There was a story I was just reading last week, and they were saying that they're showing all these FAA things that they're coming out, the news media is coming out. And then when they went to verify, they found out that it was like 90% of these things were unverifiable or they weren't accurate.
Gee.
So there's a lot of hype. The media is going to jump on it because that's what they do. They like to make stories instead of reporting the stories. So, and then the FAA, they have an agenda, so they so they're going to do that. So.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's kind of scary though. When they open the that everything back up on this, I'm a little nervous.
That's part of it. It just ticks me off because of the fact that, you know what, this can be so much fun. We can have a blast. I was watching a video on YouTube, and there's a couple of these guys that got together with a bunch of, you know, little mini quads, and they set up an obstacle course, and you could tell it was on their own private property.
Right.
And man, they were just getting it. They had GoPro cameras everywhere, and they were flying through bushes and through hula hoops and stuff, and it was fun.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I just, you know, this is the stuff that fires me up. I love it.
Right.
But then you get these clowns that are out there just doing the dumbest things ever, just because they can, and that's going to ruin it for the rest of us. And that's where, of course, that's where I get my attitude. You know,
right.
It's like, oh, come on, you know.
Right.
I think they were using DJI Phantom drone.
Uh-huh.
I think they were using that on a Discovery show I was watching last night, where this guy was supposed to get eaten by an anaconda. Did you hear about that at all?
And did you not get run off?
But they had a drone in that, and they were using it to track one of the larger anacondas.
Oh,
I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. They're going over the floating Amazon forest or whatever, trying to find the trail where it was going.
On the radio today, I just heard that I didn't watch the show, but a guy at work was telling me.
I got suckered into
it. Did you?
The
snake at the very end that coiled around.
Yeah,
him.
It cut off his circulation.
I guess it wasn't a wild snake.
No, it was a captive one.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, they said that on the.
Yeah.
Oh. I didn't know that.
If they would have caught the one that showed the trails, I mean, this thing was probably 2.5 feet.
That's
or,
what I
mean,
heard.
It was like a tree trunk
Forget
or whatever.
That.
But the one that they actually went through and tried to do the simulation of him eating was a largest captive snake, it said.
Oh, okay.
But I would have loved to have seen him. This guy was crazy. He's just jumping in looking for the head trying to get all the...
Didn't want to attack a boat or something, too? Or
they've tipped a lot of boats over trying to throw him in and stuff. Oh. The one weighed 250 pounds, I think, 12-footer or something.
No.
But he was trying to catch a 27-footer, I believe, or something in that ballpark.
I'm not into messing with something that can eat me, so forget it.
But the suit was kind of interesting. They had a carbon fiber suit, and they were trying to measure the pressure levels. They had sensors, but it didn't ramp on the actual sensors. But they said what they figure out is the pressure would be like an elephant standing on your chest. Or like a bus, something like that. The crushing forces. And they were monitoring his heart rate, and it went from 80 to 190 or something. Just he could feel, I mean, even and like he had his arms unexposed because he wanted to be able to move. And that's what eventually started constricting one arm, and he had to tap out and have everyone come in. But
No.
I thought I was trying to relate it to the drone, and they showed the feature of the drone trying to, because what happens is the vibrations of the water when you're trying to approach them, they scurry and we're diving. So getting that aerial footage was very critical, trying to isolate where it was where it was hanging out. And they were able to narrow their search that way with that drone, which was pretty cool, I thought.
And, you know, with the technology and everything, in all reality, it's so much safer whether you're doing, you know, these motocross videos or mountain bike or like the Discovery shows like the Treehouse Man. All this stuff where they're getting great footage, you know, using quadcopters or octahex, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you put a good camera on it and you know your setup and everything. And it's so much safer. So much they can do with it.
Oh, yeah.
And I just don't understand with you know, the commercial aspect of it, or why they want that so, you know, why they're frowning on that so bad, or the farmers checking their fields without, you know, hiring a pilot or renting a plane or...
Well, I know utilities are trying to use it for inspections and stuff, too. There's a lot of companies. I was supposed to meet with one with the utility I work for that they were going to meet with a private group that's going around. I don't know if they probably can hook up thermal cameras and look for hotspot lines as well, but a lot of features they could use for reliability on lines and stuff, too.
We talked about, I think it was last winter, it was a big news article in Cleveland that one of the cities or townships up there, they bought one. Because what they would have to do in the wintertime when things started freezing, they had to go around and check all these big drain pipes to see if, you know, they were freezing or if they were clogged or whatever. And the guys are all around in the ice and around those pipes, and, you know, they get hurt and slip. So they bought, you know, like one of those DJI copters and was, you know, flying around and checking things out, and they were talking about it, you know. So what? It's, you know, whatever, $1,200, $1,500 or whatever those things cost. Somehow word leaked out and the news got a hold of it and was talking about it, and the FAA shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So much too. I mean, we could go on and on.
Yeah, it
and
seems
on.
Like the utilities that I saw that are using did get approval through the FAA.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, the ones I found out about somehow.
Nice.
I mean, this was a while ago. This was probably a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they still have that privilege, but they did get permission to do what they needed to do for inspections.
Yeah.
I think it was out in California. I don't know. It was somewhere else. But
yeah. Well, think about it. You're going to have a guy, you know, hanging off of a helicopter like they used to do.
And that's how we do it.
Exactly.
I mean, we had the five-point harness and tethered to the copter, but they're literally hanging out the sides with the FLIR cameras, you know, thermally.
Right. All right. I think it's enough with that. Again, we could just go on for hours about that. We're just going to have to kind of wait and see and, you know, how it plays out and what's going to happen. And, you know, hopefully, this gets remedied one way or the other, whether they set guidelines and this is the way it's going to, or something. You know, I just, this in limbo stuff just driving me nuts. So, all right, moving on. We're, how long have we been on here? Oof, we're almost up to an hour. We'll get it cranking here. The last thing I really kind of wanted to talk about, and I don't know, this can be a touchy subject, and I get in a lot of discussions with people about, you know, this subject, and people agree, disagree. There's good points, bad points. Now, before I get all the hate mail and the hate tweets and or anything like that, just remember, everybody listening, they're just opinions or ideas. There's good points, bad points, stuff like that. So it's just opinions. You don't have to agree with me, or Wayne could have a different opinion. But what I just kind of wanted to talk about a little bit, and I'd see where you guys stand on. And be, you know, I'd like to get your opinions out there. If anybody, you know, if you want to send me an email or anything, that's fine too. But talk about some of these other companies, you know, besides Horizon, Habaco. I'm trying to think if there's any other big RC companies here in the States. But when you have companies like Hobby King, they're one. Some of these other manufacturers making planes and stuff like FMS, Dynam, other RC companies.
Banana Hobby.
Nitro Planes. But sure. What I want to kind of bring up is my opinion, you know, when I started, I don't know how long it's been now, maybe eight, probably 10 years ago now. Yeah, it's actually been 10 years ago because I always remember my son, he's 10. So that you really only had a few big companies here in the States. And you're kind of at their mercy, and it seemed to me back then it was you were really limited, you know, on what you could buy, whether it be a trainer or a warbird or whatever. It was rather expensive, you know, at the time, and it didn't seem like maybe you got, if you were lucky, it seemed like you might have got one, maybe two new planes a year, if you were lucky. So you get some of these other companies that come in, whether it be whoever, just an example, FMS, who started, you know, producing these warbirds, you know, at a cheaper price that would come with retracts, flaps, nav lights, you know. And now, again, when they started out, the quality wasn't the best. The servos weren't the best. The ESCs weren't the best. You're getting a cheaper product. They definitely didn't fly all that great. But, you know, they kind of hung in there, and they listened to the people. You know, they were very heavy into the forums. They would take your comments, suggestions, ideas. And it just kind of proves to a point, you know, when they kind of, just for an example, with their P-51, I think right now they're on version 8. You know, every year it seemed like they do a little, you know, improvement.
Enhancement. Yeah,
whether it's a bigger motor, bigger ESP. Better ESC with a BEC, Metal Gear servos. Oh, don't tell me we stopped again.
No, you're cutting out. Try getting closer.
Is that better?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, please tell me we didn't. I'm losing track now, but we almost lost that podcast on the last one. So as long as we're moving and rolling, we're good. All right. Anyway, so, you know, I just kind of want to bring up that I think if it wasn't for these other companies, you know, pushing each other, making better products, making cheaper products, my opinion in the long run is I think it's better all around for the hobbyist. You know, there's a lot of people against Hobby King. There's a lot of people for Hobby King. You know, I'm not going to lie, buy stuff from Hobby King, you know, whether it be, you know, planes or motors or ESCs, still got to get closer.
It sounds like you're cutting out.
I wonder what's going on. Is that all right
let's
now?
Let's keep going.
All right. So
their part inventory is just so vast.
Yes.
I mean, you can't hardly avoid some of the things, but.
No? Still having issues?
It sounds like it's cutting out.
Huh. Well, we'll keep going. Sounds all right in the headphones.
Yeah.
No? So, you know, I've actually talked to a lot of people that have even mentioned, you know, if it wasn't for Hobby King, and, you know, that they may not even be in the hobby. Now, before I get too far in this, just let me say, too, is I would say probably 70, 80% of all my stuff that I actually have right now, plane-wise, is probably Horizon Hobby.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a ton of their products. They make a fantastic product.
Quality's really
Quality
good.
Is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And one of my biggest... Well, there's two biggest selling points for, well, actually more than that. 90% of everything they make, they do a lot of R&D. Their stuff flies really well. Like you said, quality is good. And their customer service is next to none. I mean, I think in the business, they probably have the best customer service.
Would be nice.
Yes.
That's
so,
a huge, huge.
You know, even though you're paying a little bit more money for something like that, which I don't have a problem with, I'll pay a little bit more money for, you know, the customer service.
And support.
The other thing I like about them is almost every hobby store carries their products and has a wide range of parts.
Mm-hmm.
Not all, but generally, you know, if you need, you know, whatever pieces of parts or whatever, or you can order it online. You know, they're kind of centrally located around Chicago. If you order something, generally within a couple, two, three
That's
days,
nice.
It's at your house.
Mm-hmm. That's real nice.
So there's definitely advantages of it. Now, you know, I've also got people into this hobby that were on a very limited budget. So it's very hard to, you know, they would like to get into it, buy their own radio, maybe get a couple planes. So it's hard to sell a $300 Warbird with a $300 or $200 radio when they can get a $50 radio and maybe a $100 airplane. Maybe it might not fly as good, but, you know, if they're worried about...
They get the experience.
Yeah,
you know,
they get the experience.
Exposure.
Yeah, you know, if they auger it in the ground, they're not $300. Because let's face it, they spend all that money and go out and they try to learn, they auger the thing in the ground, they're out that money, they may not come back. So, and they're basically, you know, the $200 radio and the $50 radio, they're basically almost doing the same thing, literally. So, you know, I got mixed feelings with this. The biggest thing, too, these products, these other companies are pushing out these products. I mean, like, tons. You know, go look at Hobby King's new items page. I mean, that thing's almost hard to keep up with, you know, in a week. They're pumping out so much stuff. But along with them, the other people like Hobbico or Horizon or these American companies, they're starting to do the same thing, I feel. You know, they're pumping out a lot of products. You know, it's funny, I would hang out on the forums all the time, you know, and back then I was really into the Warbird. So we would just sit and talk and say we, you know, we were waiting for the new Park Zone airplane. And there'd be a thread on there that would be 1,000 pages on just talking about the new Park Zone plane and when it was coming out and what it was going to be and this and that, because they might have only released one a year or two a year or whatever. So
it gave you a commonality on the forum, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and even today, it's, you know, stuff like that, it's still going on.
Kind of reminds me with TV when there was only like 3, 5, and 8 in your UHF. All, when you go to school, you could all relate to a show because you didn't, and not everyone, at least in my area, had cable and all that exposure. It's kind of different now. I mean, you have so many outlets for things.
Right.
It's like nobody has a commonality to discuss things.
Right. So my feeling is the more companies we have in this hobby, the more, you know, they're kind of pushing each other and making good products, the more variety and options we have as an RC, you know, hobbyist. And again, there's all different, you know, there's some people that want nothing but the best, want to pay nothing but top dollar for whatever they buy. You know, they'll pay $30 for a servo and $80 for an ESC or whatever. But you got the complete opposite where they want the $2, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And I know a lot of people that, you know, are like that. So, like,
yeah, the competitive market is definitely an advantage as hobbyists. That's for sure.
Oh,
getting
absolutely.
Better quality for a better price.
Yeah. And it seems like here in the last 3 or 4 years, the quality of stuff and quantity of stuff has gone through the roof, no matter what it was. You know, look at even like building a quadcopter, you know, try doing that, what, Wayne, 3 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
You know, buying all the parts and the boards and everything like that. You know, I don't know what it would cost you. Now, you know, you can get a good board, like a multi-weave board, for $15.
Wow.
And it flies phenomenal, you know. Or even the KK2 board, you know, what are they, $20?
That's reasonable,
bucks?
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's crazy.
What do you think, Wayne?
Well, you know how I am. I'm one of those people, I don't really care what everybody else thinks, you know, because you do have the people out there that like to bash everybody else because they buy from Hobby King,
mm-hmm.
you know. They make you sound like you're subhuman or something. It's like, yeah, shut up. Go away. It's, I don't care. To me, it's you buy what you want from who you want and then go out and enjoy it. Okay,
yeah.
I shoot a Canon camera. I love mine. Is
yeah.
Nikon better? I don't know. But do you like it? Get it. Go shoot some pictures. Who cares?
Yeah.
And too many people put their pride and their image on their objects. I'm just one of those people. Hey, I just want to go fly. Horizon Hobby, I love it. But, yeah, the thing is with more competition,
mm-hmm.
we end up with better stuff,
right.
cheaper stuff, and whatever, you know, but we get variety. So you get to pick, okay, I want to pay $50 for a servo,
right.
or I want to pay $2 for one.
Right.
It's everybody gets what they want, and just go out and enjoy the hobby. That's the big thing.
Right.
I like
right.
the fact that, hey, but the flip side also, too, is, hey, I can go to one place. I need a battery. They don't have it in stock. Well, somebody else may have it.
Right.
I'm still up in the air.
Yeah.
I go get it, and I'm up in the air, and I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, again, it's one thing what Flight Test has done, too, with the foam board planes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally,
yes.
if how many people I have talked to and run into, you know, and Wayne, you can attest to this, mm-hmm. we're out flying that come up and go, man, I've always wanted to do that, but it's way too expensive. Yep. When you go pull out a $30 flight test plane out of your trunk and go, well, this is $30. And they're mm-hmm. like, what?
Right.
You know, $30? You know.
Yeah, people still have that image of if you're going to fly RC, you're going to spend hundreds of dollars getting in the air.
Right.
And then when they find out, no, you can still get in the air for $100.
Yeah, know? Exactly. And they're, you know, when you mention $100, and then their eyes kind of light up right. like, wow, I could try this for $100.
And then you still have the option of getting, you know, multi-$1,000 airplanes and whatever. You still have that, but you can work up to it. It's right. not like you have to start right out of the gate and get yourself a Balsa plane and learn how to build it, which is not, I mean, that I am envious of people who can do that.
Right.
But if you can't do that and go out and buy a box, you know, bind and fly. Yeah. Hey, hello.
Right.
You know,
right.
Get it in the air and fly.
It's nice that it's becoming affordable for
yes.
people learning
right.
is what I think
exactly.
we're getting at, because you didn't want to have all that money investment.
Right.
And then just get one shot at it, basically, you know.
A really good example of that is my buddy and neighbor, Brian Harness, who's been wanting to do this for years, knew I was into this and kept going, hey, I'd like to go out, I'd like to see it, blah, blah, blah. Took him out, and he flew the Delta Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And literally the next day, he walked right down here, picked up a Delta Ray. They're 100, you know, got it for $150, ready to go. Everything, battery control, everything. We went out, and I gave him a 10-minute lesson, mm-hmm. I think. And right after that, the guy was out on his own the next, I think, 3 nights in a row, and literally flying on his own
yep.
for $150, no
right.
problem.
And you know, it makes it a lot easier to pull out friends, kids,
yes.
grandkids, neighbors, whatever. It's so much easier now to, hey, I got this plane. I can teach you on this and go out and fly. You know, I mean, if you got a $500 airplane, you're going to hand that radio off to
no.
somebody that's never flown before.
No.
Or you got a 7-year-old grandson that wants to fly.
Right.
Sure. But it's a lot easier when you have these options, you know.
Right, right. And Mike, you know, you're kind of the same way. How many flight test planes do you have hanging on your wall in your basement now? Do you
and
even
I just,
have more
I
room?
Just, I'm excited because I want to get this FT Mini Scout or
yeah.
the Mighty Mini Scout going because
uh-huh.
I don't have any indoor flyers. And with winter, hopefully I can get in an auditorium with some of these guys and,
right.
and do a little flying. It'd
I mean,
be fine.
What, really, do you know what you're up to now? 15? What do you think?
As far as just FT products, I'd say probably 20.
Oh my!
That are
okay,
built.
So there you go. But then, but then you know you have like a, what do you got like a Radian?
Because I have another 10 of other like stuff.
Yeah. Well, I know you got a Radian for sure. You got the Ultra Micro Radian. What else do you have? And oh, you got a Durafly,
the Corsair.
Corsair.
Yeah, because we flew that.
Park Zone Wildcat.
A Spitfire.
Oh yeah, you
the
got
Durafly
that.
Spitfire.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which yeah,
yeah
I rebuilt that. I didn't buy that one new. I got
so
got the Tech Sumo.
Yeah.
I got the one that I lost one, and I think what's it called now? It's a smaller scale Swift, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Is
yeah.
that what I'm thinking?
Kinetic.
No, not Swift. Kinetic.
Oh, the Kinetic.
Kinetic.
Yeah.
Yes, I have that, and I have a Cub.
Right. So there you go. I mean, you have
a
huge
different
variety of Stratus. Planes from all over. You know,
all different vendors and stuff.
Right.
I mean, my first plane, and I know you kind of smirked at Banana Hobby, but they treated me fine.
Yeah.
I had that Sky Surfer and I loved it.
Yeah.
That got me hooked. I
right.
mean, I know some of their videos and stuff were a little out there,
yeah.
but
poor Pete.
It worked
Pete,
for
though.
Me.
You know, Pete, at least
he's like, he's like so over enthusiastic.
Yeah.
I mean, but I it hooked me. I'm not kidding. I know as hokey
yeah,
as it was.
I know.
I it hooked me and I enjoyed that product. So.
I mean, I'll be the first to admit it. I used to sit out on a Saturday and go through about 4 or 5 Banana Hobby videos. Hello, pilots. I'm Pete
know,
from Banana
Hobby.
And
after talking to people, they're like, oh, he annoys the heck out of me. I'm like, well, it didn't hit me that way. That's just my personal.
I really like Pete. So, and you know, from what
man.
I heard too, Pete, he was that's a really down to earth, you know, good guy who's just very passionate about the hobby.
Oh,
you know?
Passionate. I don't even know if that's a strong enough word for it.
So that's kind of
you
fun,
can man. Feel that, that's for sure.
But I mean, do you guys agree though? I mean, with all this competition and everything, it really is, for I think, helping the hobby.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, bringing things, it's just bigger, better, cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. Anyway, we won't. I won't dread too much on that. I just thought it was kind of interesting. We've been talking about that the last few days of the variety and the things you can do in this hobby. And you know, if you want
to, I'm not really. I don't feel like I'm held to any one vendor. There's pros to each one. I think.
Right.
I mean, it depends what you're looking for and what you want.
Yeah, and you know, and I give some props to Horizon Hobby too. You know, if you have been noticing, at least I do, because I buy a lot of their products here. And this last year, they have really been dropping their prices.
Yes, yeah. I remember.
You know, they're stepping up their game and making better quality. Well, I shouldn't say quality, but you know, you used to buy
more affordable.
Affordable. You used to have to buy a Warbird and then turn around and buy servos for the flaps, maybe buy the gear and
all these add-ons.
Yeah, and I kind of understand their marketing. Some people don't want it or pay the extra money for it, you know. But now they're actually dropping their prices on their airplanes, and some of them are coming with all that ready to go.
Yeah.
Nav lights and flaps and gear, all, you know.
So that's nice.
I give them a lot of credit. I think they're stepping up their game. And so that was my 2 cents on it. Yeah, anything else on that? Anything?
Nope.
Anything?
Bueller? No.
All right. Well, man, we're over an hour already. I guess we could maybe get out of here. Couple things I just wanted to throw out real quick. We've been super busy. We still have stuff here that we're trying to review and shooting some video and getting the guys out there and getting the controller in their hands. We may take a little break over Christmas. We'll see how it goes. I know this one's coming out here Friday, and then the flight test. So I think the next one's going to be would be released after Christmas. So we'll play it by ear. We got some stuff, and we got stuff, you know, quite a bit of stuff that we can sit down and chat. We will, but I think we're probably going to take a break till maybe after the holidays. But we'll see how it goes. So bear with us. We got some stuff. The weather's been horrible. You know, getting dark at 4 o'clock. So really, the only thing time
weekends is available.
Weekends. So,
and I'm finally freed up on weekends. So
good.
Hopefully that'll help.
Yep. We're gonna do a little indoor stuff though, I think, and I should have the Nano Blade Nano QX FPV copter. So we're going to get that, maybe do the Vapor FPV.
I guess I could bring my MQX then for indoor.
Yeah. So we got stuff coming. So hang in there. I know we've been talking about it, but we will get it out there. So other than that, keep sending in your crash stories. Man, these ones this week were really good. I probably should have maybe called somebody up. But we get another real good one. We're going to give you a call and talk to you again. Other than that, follow us on Instagram at FT After Hours. Hit me up on Twitter at FT After Hours, or shoot me an email at chris@flighttest.com. So other than that, we're out of here, and we'll see you sometime.
See you guys.
All right. Bye.